chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, and no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass may have in the middle of it. Grass may have in the middle. We are grass may have.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. This is a special with Tony Gosling from Bristol, England, commenting on the Soleimani attack that occurred recently in Iraq. Welcome to our program, Tony Gosling.
Hi, George. Yeah, thanks very much for asking me on. I mean, this is an incredible incident. Qasem Soleimani, general from the Republican Guard. I mean, I've got a bit of personal experience of the Iranian Republican Guard. Very professional outfit. When I was over in Tehran about 4 or 5 years ago, they were basically our bodyguards. And even though many of them didn't really speak English, you really did get a sense that they were a top professional outfit. They were prepared to put their own lives in danger to protect the journalists and the academics that were over in Tehran for this conference on 17,000 Iranian victims of terrorism, which I was at. And I would compare them to something like, very much like our own SAS here in Britain. They're quite tough guys. They're very tough guys, extremely well-disciplined, extremely professional, and you know what? A very good sense of humour too. So they were light-hearted as well as professional and tough. And of course, this is exactly the sort of person that makes a very good bodyguard. These are the people that Qasem Soleimani commanded, and although it was obviously a version of the Republican Guard that were out abroad, militias abroad, and backing up governments throughout the Middle East who've invited them in. I mean, this is the very great sadness of the attack by the Americans on the convoy coming out of Baghdad Airport, which killed Qasem Soleimani. It's really a shame that something like that should happen, because what it's done, of course, is it's just completely burnt all the bridges with the Iraqis. So if the Americans had any pretense of being in Iraq to bolster the safety and security of the region, etc., it's quite clearly been blown out of the water. This, by the way, I don't know if you've seen, but I noticed the media in Syria, the Syria Arab News Agency, reporting that actually Soleimani was not in over in Iraq to kill Americans, so-called. He was there to foster better relations between Iraq and Saudi Arabia, and Syria and Saudi Arabia, which of course is something that the Israelis do not want. They want to have very bad relations between the Saudis and these other countries. In fact, so part of his role over in Iraq on Friday morning, very early when he was killed, was to actually to try to sort of calm down the Saudis and possibly even to slow down or even stop the war in Yemen. So it's a very different picture which is being painted right across the Middle East than we're hearing here in the Western media, George.
Right. I think Trit Parsi says something similar to what you just stated right there, that he was possibly there to reconcile Saudi Arabia with Iran.
Let's make no mistake. This is an enormous event, this assassination.
Yes, it
is. I would compare it to the assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand back on the 28th of June 1914 in Sarajevo, which led to the First World War. I mean, if you take a step back from all of this, you can see quite clearly that the war is almost ready to go. So you've got Russia and China on one side, and, you know, the United States and Europe on the other side. Incredible to see, and we were very disappointed here in Britain, to see that Britain and most of the European countries have pretty much all fallen in line with the appalling US war crime to assassinate this guy. I mean, it's just beyond belief that this man, Boris Johnson, speaks for the British people. Of course he doesn't. We've had demonstrations out on the streets here in London against this assassination, saying how crazy it is. I mean, the equivalent, if the Iranians were to do the same to the United States, George, just try this thought experiment. What would have happened on Friday morning was that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mike Milley, would have been assassinated. Now, imagine if that had happened, and one of the Middle Eastern powers, say the Syrians or, I don't know, the Libyans or the Lebanese, had assassinated the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And by the way, Mike Milley has spent quite a long time 6,000 miles away from Washington in Baghdad. So, you know, it's not as if he's not in the same kind of area. Of course, the response from the Americans would have been absolutely overwhelming and extremely vicious. It's incredible to look at the way that the Iranians have, so far anyway, not responded. But it's also worth saying that we've got a real dangerous window here. And this is why they do these provocations, George, I'm quite convinced, is that every time there's a provocation like this, an evil act, let's use the word evil, because that's exactly what this is. Trying to start a world war is about as evil as acts get, actually. Is it creates an opportunity for a false flag attack. So what we could see potentially is some kind of so-called reaction from Iran, which is nothing of the sort, which actually may be a constructed attack by the Israelis or by the US or by the British against our own side, then, which is then blamed on Iran in order to try to get a war fueled. I mean, this is what happened that started the Second World War. In fact, it was something called the Gliwice incident on the Polish-German border, where a whole bunch of concentration camp inmates were dressed up in Polish uniforms and then given lethal injections, and their bodies were left around a radio station in Germany. And the photographs were beamed around the world, including printed in the New York Times. And those photographs supposedly showed a bunch of Poles had invaded Germany and invaded this radio station. It was nothing of the sort. It was a media construct and a complete false flag. So that's the sort of thing that we could possibly see happening. I mean, it's amazing as well to hear Donald Trump saying that Soleimani was killed to stop a war. Of course, he wasn't, and he was killed in order to try and start a war. He was called the number one terrorist in the world. Well, actually, he was one of the most important anti-terror operators who had been the main person, along with Putin and his air power, that had defeated ISIS in Iraq and in Syria. So, I mean, they also said, didn't they? I don't know if you heard Trump saying he caught him in the act. Well, caught him in the act of going through the arrivals procedure at an airport. I mean, that's not quite what I think is meant by being caught in the act. So the other thing, of course, is we've got all this nuclear weapons in Israel, and the Israelis threatening with the new defense minister is Naftali Bennett, threatening to attack Iran right now. So you've got Trump saying, no, there won't be any, we don't want to. But the Israelis are quite obviously banging the drums of war. That's what they want. And they believe in their twisted fundamentalist view that a war is somehow necessary, prophesied. And that's one of the reasons, I'm afraid, George, that the Israelis have just simply not taken any efforts for peace in the Middle East seriously.
Well, you know, there's a couple of things here. There's been a red flag that's been unfurled over the Holy Dome of Jamkaran Mosque in Qom. And then there was an $80 million bounty out on Trump's head now that was put out just recently. And the third thing is that I'm not finding out that enough information about who that American was and exactly where he was killed and by whom over there that started some of these problems.
Well, yeah, apparently he was an employee.
Right.
And he had some kind of U.S. citizenship. That's what I heard. He was a translator.
Okay.
And so he wasn't actually a U.S. citizen originally. This is one of the things they do, George, and I've noticed this quite a lot, is that they recruit people to help the military in countries where the West is not generally liked, like places like Syria, Turkey, places like that. And what they do is they promise them citizenship as a kind of bribe. So, in other words, well, you can come, you know, if you work for us for a while, you will then have rights to come and live and work in the United States or in Europe. And that's the category of the guy that was killed. So they're making out that he's some kind of, you know, true blue American boy. And, of course, he's not. He's just one of these people who's been bribed in on the promise of some kind of American citizenship and residence rights.
Right. And I did a search of the main search engines, and all the information out there is about Americans leaving, all the results of the searches, but not about any details about the attack. And then a Syrian girl, you know Syrian girl, she's coming forward and saying that the attack was far removed from where any of those related Iranian-backed militias were.
The thing that's annoyed the Iraqis is that the people who were killed, I think there were five killed altogether in this vehicle going from the airport.
Right.
Many of them were actually Iraqi war heroes. So what's happened is the United States has really deliberately put its finger right on the pulse of getting the whole of the Middle East to hate America. Now, you have to wonder, what is Donald Trump think he's doing? Who is pulling Donald Trump's strings? The only people that benefit from this, it seems to me, are the people that want a war with Iran, and that is the Israelis, the Israel lobby. I mean, there is another aspect, of course, and that is that you've got an enormous great arms industry in the US and here in Britain that actually, you know, because we, you know, we're in ordinary, you know, us mere mortals, well, we say, well, no one wants a war. Well, of course, they do want a war, George, and they want to sell more and more of their arms. And this is a good way to do it. The other thing, of course, is that people often forget this, is that we're sitting in a very fragile financial situation. So that is the former governor of the Bank of England. He's part of that interesting little group, the G30 in Washington, who are basically like the executive committee for global capitalism. Mervyn King is one of them now. But he was the former governor of the Bank of England. I mean, he's actually a very nice guy. But he's pointed out that there's 166 trillion debt time bomb.
Yes. Now, nobody talks about that, but you and a few other people. Right. That's good.
Well, there are just a few of us, George. But the point being that if you're betting on a crash, money. And this is what these people are going to do. Of course, if they can be involved in triggering a world war, a complete and utter collapse in the supply of oil, a massive, massive shooting through the roof of the oil prices, by speculating and betting with futures and by derivatives particularly, this is basically a casino. And these people will make an absolute fortune. We're talking about billions of dollars in a matter of just a few days or hours. So this is the kind of crazy situation that we've got ourselves into, and which the appalling war, pro-war mass media that never looks at these things is really complicit in, because we should have a press, we should have journalists who are promoted into national positions who keep a very close eye on all this stuff, and so prevent war, prevent profiteering from war, and prevent people actually wanting to create a war in order to make money. So that's, I'm afraid, the big failing again, and it always seems to come back to the appalling state of journalism in the West, George.
Yes, it is. we have a financial crisis already underway here. The Fed has started quantitative easing, and they've committed up to $500 billion worth of money. And we've got a banking problem right here in the United States right now, much less the world debt.
Well, that's right. And I don't think there's going to be any ending of that very soon. I mean, the other thing to say about this drone attack is it's a bit like, I mean, I think of it in a way as the modern poison legacy of all that fun and games in the 1960s with the space program, because the US domination of space and putting satellites, invulnerable satellites, into space is the main piece of technology which has led to this ability with drones to literally take out anyone they want, almost anywhere in the world. Well, obviously it's not going to be quite so easy in places like Russia and China to do this sort of thing, but in theory, it's still possible even in those countries before the Russians and the Chinese get on top of the situation. We had back in the Chechen wars in the 1990s, one of the first examples of this, which was President Dudayev of Chechnya, who was on his mobile phone talking apparently to Putin or somebody, maybe it was Yeltsin, about peace. And his phone was homed in on by a Hellfire missile, and he was blown to pieces. So this is the world we're living in now. Is if once you've got these super satellites up there, keeping an eye on everything, listening with radio contact, etc., and you've got the drones, and you've got the Hellfire missiles, you've got a global assassination system. And of course, this is really the goal, I think, which is global domination. We've got to be absolutely clear. This is the US goal, and I would say that the Brits think that they're going to benefit from it as well. I mean, in a way, George, it's funny, isn't it? Because when the end of the Second World War came and the British clearly had lost their empire, and the Americans then tried to take over that empire and thought, well, we're in charge of the Middle East now. In many ways, they were. The British and Cecil Rhodes, up until the 1920s, had harbored desires to take over the world. They really did decided that if they carried on in this same way as they had done. Rhodes and the British, I mean, this was represented really in his will through the Chatham House and the Royal Institute for International Affairs, the connections that Rhodes also had with the Council on Foreign Relations in the United States, that big business funding and fueling and manipulating foreign policy could help their individual countries and governments and militaries to take over the world. And that's exactly the same track that the US has continued on. The only trouble is, George, of course, the cat is well out of the bag decades ago, and there's no way they're going to achieve this, but it seems that they're hell-bent on banging their head against this brick wall of world takeover so hard that they're going to drive us into a third world war instead.
You know, they manipulated, remember the gas attacks in Syria, or they manipulated Trump back then. Some people are saying maybe they manipulated him on this recent incident into...
No, you may be right. I mean, I did get the impression from Trump's speech on Friday that he looked a little bit nervous, actually. He was reading from an auto cue. He didn't really look as if he had the confidence in the words that he was saying. And, of course, that, I'm afraid, ever since the assassination of John F. Kennedy by Lyndon Johnson, by the CIA, by the FBI, and using the Chicago Mafia hitmen, even ever since then, really, the American presidents have been, I suppose, rather worried and concerned, quite rightly, that they've got enemies within their own gates, and that the deep state is constantly threatening the president. And that's, I'm afraid, one of the other things that's happened, is that we've lost any real sense of democracy. Well, the same cannot be said for places like Syria and Russia, and even Iran, because although they have a religious system, I mean, you know, there's still a very democratic system for electing your president over in Iran. What they're saying is, basically, you've got to fit within a certain moral code in order to be allowed to stand for election. And I wonder sometimes whether actually we could do with that sort of system, so that if you have been proven to be morally deficient, you know, whatever it is, cheating on your wife or whatever it is, that you shouldn't be allowed to stand to run the country. Because the trouble with people like with people like Boris Johnson and with Donald Trump is their infidelity to women just does not give us as people, ordinary people, the confidence that they can be trusted to run the country if they can't even be trusted to have a decent relationship with their wives or with their girlfriends or with women, you know. So, you know, the idea of having a moral integrity is actually, I think, a very good one that they've got over in Iran right now. And you're quite right about the Duma and the Ghouta chemical weapons attacks. They were proven to be nonsense, which is why I think they were proved not to be Assad doing them. They were set up by the West, by the Israelis,
when those white helmets were in there on all of those.
And this is why I think, you know, this is their, basically they've got form. This is why we need to be very concerned about the potential right now for some kind of false flag attack to be blamed on the Iranians, because...
Well, I'm not seeing enough search results.
Yeah, our fingers poised above the record button in case anything happens.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I'm not seeing. I'm continuing here. I'm not seeing any search results that would enable us to dig down deeper into the attack that killed this so-called American that set off these events. And I'm just not seeing the search results that should be forthcoming. So it's being manipulated, the search results.
Well, I just think we've got to be aware of the potential for a false flag right now.
That's right.
It's quite potential for a false flag right now. And this is the characteristics that we've seen that the West has employed.
Often, Chancellor Pierce is saying...
Gives them a bit of a window of opportunity on the media.
To
do something like that. But look, remember as well, you've got nuclear weapons over there. You know, the Israeli
nuclear
of them, and the Israelis pushing for war. So I think that's what this assassination is really all about, is the Israelis moving the U.S.
And closer the Israel to war with
the
Iran.
Moving the
U.S. It's moving us closer. And that red flag that was put up over that mosque over there, they've never put up that flag, and that's supposed to be the flag of Hussein, which signifies ultimate revenge for someone taking blood unjustly attack on you.
Right. Remember, also we've had the threat.
It's dangerous. These symbols mean something to these people. Maybe not to us, but they do to them.
If I can just say finally, there's been the threat today of attacking 52 sites.
Right.
I mean, I would suggest the number 52 is apparently, according to Trump, is the number of Iranian hostages which were taken. Well, it's also the number of cards in a pack. It does suggest to me that, you know, there's a hidden message in there, maybe, that what they're doing is basically game theory, that this is a game play, and that they see World War III as a game to be won.
Right.
Never mind the millions or possibly even billions of human casualties. That doesn't seem to concern them. It's just a game to them. And also...
Well, that would...
...of cultural sites, of course, is not only a war crime, but it does show you that the people behind this are actually cultural nihilists, that they see history, the humanities...
Right.
As destructive. I mean, it reminds me actually of that famous quote from Hitler's powerful deputy Martin Bormann, that every educated person is a future enemy.
Right.
They're basically trying to dumb
us
down, trying to turn us into a bunch of morons that don't know anything. All we can do is fight. And that is actually the way they like it. They like the idea that people are kind of driven down into their kind of lizard brain, and all they can do is react emotionally, and that their intellect is completely starved. And that's the sort of world we're heading towards, particularly a lot over here in the UK, to do with the privatization of our education system, our schools, our universities. What's happening is our young people's minds is being filled basically with just the ideas of the commercial world, fighting for money day after day after day until you die. It seems to be the only thing that they're interested in. And that, of course, is really a mafia mindset. It's the mafia mindset is that they do not like the idea that there's any kind of sort of superior, higher purpose. All they're really interested, I'm afraid, George, is to dumb down the Western population. This is a battle, by the way, that we're bound to lose, or they are bound to lose. You know, they cannot win such a war, but they can take a lot of people down trying. And that, I think, is the where we are. I remember Anton Chaikin, the son of Jacob Chaikin, who was the strategist and the lawyer for the Jewish boycott of Nazi Germany in the 1930s. I remember Anton Chaikin saying this a few years ago now, but he was explaining how, well, it's just really a question of how much we can limit the damage which these people are going to do, because at some point in the future, whether it's through war, famine, crash, starvation, ecological disaster, they are going to create an absolute devastating nightmare here on planet Earth. And what we've got to do is we've just got to have some sort of resistance to that and try and make it and minimalize it. And that's really all we can do, is to try and minimalize the damage that these maniacs are trying to do. And of course, the assassination of Soleimani is another prime example of the sorts of people we're talking about, and the project to effectively destroy mankind with a bunch of psychopaths. And I'm afraid the world is waking up, but is it going to wake up quick enough? That's the question, George.
Right. You know, we've got the World Economic Forum coming up at the end of this month at Davos, Switzerland. And that's where about 1,500 corporations meet.
Boris Johnson has banned his ministers from going.
Oh, he has?
He said he doesn't want any of them hobnobbing with Billy.
Really? Really? Well, that's surprising.
Yeah, which I was quite surprised at. Anyway, Okay. Listen, show is at thisweek.org.uk every week. We're really going to have to go now, George.
Okay.
But thanks ever so much for asking me on again.
Okay, thank you very much, Tony Godling from Bristol, England. Thank you very much.